Governor Ned Lamont and state education officials are hoping for better innovative learning experiences for children facing the rest of the spring and summer with school buildings closed because of the coronavirus pandemic. Governor Ned Lamont said, quote, our great strength as a state is our amazing education system. So this is tough. Saying we won't have traditional learning between now and at the end of June, but we are going to be leaders when it comes to non-traditional learning right now, end quote. He said that online lessons and teleconferencing introduced back in March could become part of the state's long-term educational strategy as well. The highly anticipated closure announcement from Lamont and Commissioner of Education Miguel Cardona came Tuesday morning after parents, teachers, and administrators from around the state increasingly questioned the wisdom of bringing 530 students into close proximity to one another too soon. Joining us now, our next guest is the commissioner here in the state of Connecticut for the Department of Education. We've had him on, I think it was a couple of months ago, back in March. We heard from a lot of our listeners, both online and on air, telling us how much they really enjoyed the interview and actually really like him a lot. Here he is. It is Dr. Cardona. Nice to talk to you this morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. It really is. How have you been since over the last couple of months? Real busy, I would imagine.
Let me tell you, a lot has changed. But, most of what we do with schooling now is different. But the same passion that our educators have in Connecticut, it's still there. We just have to do our work differently now.
Listen, that's great. And my wife is a teacher. She's been a teacher for 14 years, and loves her job. There are questions, though, that callers, our listeners have called up every now and then asking kind of a resounding question, and that is, will online teaching, and actually, I think I spoke to this in the intro here, will that become a permanent thing here and going into the future?
I'll be the first one to tell you, and I know I'm speaking to the choir here, especially because your wife is a teacher, the computer will never replace a teacher. The quality of experience and learning that our students are getting is not the same as when you go into a classroom and you have a classroom teacher and you're able to engage with the teacher and learn things and get small group instruction and follow up. So that's not meant to replace what we're doing. However, I think what we have to keep in mind is that the long-term plan for this recovery in Connecticut will require that distance learning be a part of it. So I don't believe, based on what I'm learning from our health experts in Connecticut, that there's going to be a flip of the switch where on September 1st, we're all going to be able to go back to school. So we want to try to limit the learning loss from students, which means that distance learning will still be a part of the experience.
Yeah, I mean, because I know in talking with my wife and talking to her colleagues and friends that we have that are also teachers, it's challenging to teach going forward, to teach new things, particularly to elementary level students, where they're very visual, and as opposed to, giving them an assignment of something that was already taught. And so therefore you're still technically, having school time, but not necessarily, teaching new instruction of going forward.
You're right. What we're trying to do in many cases is prevent learning loss, and where possible, introduce new concepts in a way that we know doesn't jive well with what we know about how kids learn, right? I read something yesterday, a parent who, and I give parents so much credit. They're doing their very best, but I don't expect parents to be math teachers now. But right. I had one parent say, listen, kid, you're learning it the way I learned it 20, 30 years ago, because the way they do math instruction now is a little bit different with conceptual understanding than the whole, regrouping and carrying the one and all that. But it was funny how the parents shared, you're going to learn it the way I learned it because I'm not a math teacher now. So we recognize that.
Yeah, it's a great point. I did not learn through the Common Core, whereas the kids are learning now, right? It's the old we learn the old-fashioned way.
Right, right. So the parent brought it up to say, listen, number one, you're going to learn it the way I did it. And number two, this is overwhelming. And both points are recognized that we're not anticipating that parents are going to become teachers overnight. But also we want to give parents the freedom to say, it's okay, do your very best and don't stress yourselves out too much over this.
You know, there is concerns, though. I mean, the rest of the school year, I think the writing was on the wall. But going into the next school year, the concern is that parents may find themselves back to work physically, you know, at their place of employment, where right now, let's face it, I think everybody knows a lot of people are working from home, or maybe they were furloughed temporarily with the hopes of you know, going back to work sometime over the summer, certainly by fall. We hope, we keep our fingers crossed. But the concern is that, well, if they've got a child that's home in an of elementary or middle school level, it poses quite a quandary, you know.
Right, right. We're working. I mean, later today we have more discussion about reopening and how we're going to communicate to districts how they can begin reopening. The goal is to have some form of summer school programming available in July. And, you know, assuming that the trends in health data continue to improve, that's a critical, critical component. That if we see the same level of improvement in terms of lowering of numbers of people going into the hospital and accessibility of testing continues to improve, that there's a likelihood that by September we're going to be able to start reopening schools, which alleviates the concern that you shared.
Yeah.
I think one of the things we also have to keep in mind as a state is, you know, we are slowly moving forward, but if there is a relapse, if you will, or a step backwards, we have to be prepared to maintain that level of safety and remove students out of large settings where they can transmit it to people in their homes or to staff.
Yeah, and I don't think, in talking, you know, to our listeners and talking to the general public, I don't think, like I said, I think the writing was on the wall, but I don't think many people are upset or surprised unless they're a senior in high school, and we'll get to that in a minute. But it's I think they're more concerned about going forward next year, not only because of the reason I mentioned where the parents themselves won't be home, but instructional learning, the hands-on, right, particularly with the youngsters who need that, as well as, you know, the social component to it, you know, having not just friends, but the interpersonal relationships that students would have not only with their teachers, but their fellow students that you just can't get homeschooling or schooling online.
Right. You can only Zoom so much and connect with your friends so much on Zoom.
Exactly.
You're right. Schools are more than just academic places where kids learn skills. They're really communities, and students have lost that sense of, not lost, but students have been disengaged to a great extent from that community of caring individuals and friends, which is critically important as you're developing your brain and, you know, coming into your own. So you're absolutely right. We have to make sure we do it, and we do it in a way that's safe for students to kind of reengage in those important skill developments that is a natural part of school. So we're working on coming up with a plan. We want to communicate that information as early as possible so parents can plan according to that. And we're using the CDC guidelines, and we're using the experts in our state to make sure that we can do it in a way that's safe.
And there's another component to that as well, Doctor. I mean, there's the extracurricular activities. There's clubs and organizations and sports that these kids of all ages, you know, from kindergarten right up through senior year in high school, are involved in, whether it's the art club or the drama club or the various sports. And I think there's another area of concern. As you know, as it was, they forfeited things in the spring. And I don't think you'll get an argument from anybody. I mean, even the toughest critics could sit there and say, well, yeah, there was such an immediate spike in you know, cases. And, you know, as we learn more about the demographics and the vulnerabilities and who is most prone to it, I know that this is an age demographic that really doesn't fall into that vulnerability category. But I also understand that there's others that need to be considered. There are teachers of various ages. There's faculty of various ages that you have to consider as well, right?
We do. We have to think about not only the students and the impact. And we're learning more. You know, it's not to say that there's no effect on children. We're learning more as we go along. But we have children with what's called comorbidities. So we have children in our school system that have thankfully survived cancer. We have children that have had heart surgery or that have weakened immune systems or that have asthma. Those students are more likely to have more serious effects. So we have to protect them. We have to protect the staff. We have to protect the families that they go back to. Many of our students live in multi-generational homes. Mm. So we're also protecting the grandmother who is at the home and cares for the child as well. So, and initially, one of the concerns that I had was we need to protect our healthcare workers by preventing a surge in hospitals because we're not taking the precautions that we need to take to keep people at home as much as possible. So, you know, that was a consideration also. Our hospitals, initially especially, were maxed out. And we all needed to do our part to keep those numbers low to protect the healthcare workers.
Yeah, and there's a, listen, absolutely. But I think those few students would be the exception more than the rule who have, you know, a pre-existing heart condition or if they have asthma. I mean, wouldn't it be easier to just keep those select kids home and have the otherwise healthy children, you know, attend school?
Right. Yeah, no, we do have a plan. We are planning, I should say, to integrate all students the best possible in maintaining safety for students and staff that are more vulnerable, communicating the risks to families so that they can plan accordingly with regard to, you know, what risks might be out there when students are at schools, ensuring that we're communicating what the guidelines are with regard to face coverings and social distancing. So we do have a plan to move it forward. We want to make sure we do it in a safe way. And we also want to think about our vulnerable populations and think about what we could do a little bit differently to give them experiences while trying to maintain a very safe environment for them as well.
And I could see why people like you. I could see why you're so popular with our listeners. You're very, you know, you're very straightforward, and it looks like you look at things from all angles in both my times of speaking with you. And you're perfectly, you speak perfectly frank, and that's so appreciated, your transparency. I want to switch gears a little bit to our high school seniors who have been, man, let's face it. They've been dealt a bad rap. You know, I was in high school. You were in high school. Our listeners were in high school. If there's one year that you remember out of high school year, it's your senior year for various reasons that we don't have to get into on this show. But it's certainly memorable even as me, as somebody who's 50 years old. I remember my high school year. And listen, they've been asked to swallow a lot here, especially when sports have been canceled and there were undefeated teams and drama musicals were canceled as well because you couldn't have, you know, back in March, you couldn't have people congregate in the auditoriums and after trying to learn their lines for several months and staging and so on and so forth. And to understand or from my perspective here is that these kids, for the most part, these seniors will not be getting some type of graduation, although we've been hearing rumors that maybe there'll be something that will take place in August. There is an organization I know that's trying to do something. I think it's called One Graduation, One Playbook, or One Class, One Graduation. They're trying to do something, and they've got some pretty strict guidelines that they've submitted to the governor. But it's more than just a graduation, because on graduation day, if you remember, I only saw the kids that were sitting next to me in the Civic Center where we held it, you know, and I didn't get a chance to see everybody. But it's that whole, maybe it's that week that leads up to graduation where you could get your yearbook and you can have it signed and you can stay and, you know, get exchange phone numbers, well, email addresses. As you know, that's the last time for some people that you'll ever see that individual again. Not everybody attends class reunions, and sadly, some people even pass away. It's sad but true. And I is there any plan to at least maybe have seniors only? In other words, kindergarten through 11 stay home, but for seniors, maybe the last week or at least the last few days, would they be able to come in, say their goodbyes, and maybe even get a signature or two on, or several on in their yearbook? Would that even be a consideration?
So thank you for bringing that up. And you're absolutely right. The senior class of 2020 has had to endure more, more of a sacrifice with regard to schooling than any other group. And, you know, my heart breaks for them. It really does. I mean, I have an eighth grade daughter who was in a play, and she found out, I made the announcement Tuesday with the governor. She found out Wednesday that that play is not going to happen. And as a father, that broke my heart. And I knew it was coming, and it still hurt. Now, I cannot imagine that. I don't have a senior in my home. I can't imagine the pain that they're feeling and the frustration that they're feeling, the legitimate frustration that they're feeling. You know, we had these conversations at the reopening education task force meetings. And, you know, we defer, again, as I said earlier, we always have to defer to our health team to make sure that we're making decisions that are safe. And there's a very strong feeling that we have to maintain the same social distancing for events like that as we would in Executive Order 7X, where there's less than five people. They are looking to see how the, you know, reduction in hospitalizations occurs so that they could probably increase the number of people that come together in a social setting. But that number, I don't anticipate that number going very high. So these are the guidelines that we still are required to follow, including, you know, graduations or gatherings like that. As difficult as it is to swallow, I think what I've been hearing from superintendents, they've been working with their students, with their teachers, to try to identify a way to honor the students in a way that's not going to replace the graduation, just like the laptop will never replace a teacher, but give them an opportunity to be honored and celebrated for the hard work that they've put into to the graduation.
Would that take place in the fall? Would that take place in the summer? Or, I mean, keep in mind, I mean, we're still at only the eighth day of the month of May. I mean, there's really, I don't know, five, maybe even 6 weeks to go until a time that the seniors normally would be graduating. And a lot of progress can be made in that duration of time. Is there any possibility that sometime in the month of June, strictly speaking, only in regard to high school seniors? So you're eliminating, you know, three quarters of the students in the high school. The freshmen wouldn't have to attend, the sophomores, the juniors. If we just brought the seniors in for a couple of days to say goodbyes, to exchange phone numbers, emails, to, you know, to get sign yearbooks, you know, and even if you're maintaining social distancing, just to at least allow them to have that experience along with the graduation. Is that at least being considered, or has that decision already been made?
It is being considered, being discussed. However, as I said earlier, and I think the governor was pretty clear on Tuesday, you know, we have to maintain sizes that are going to ensure safety for all. There's nothing that could slow down the reentry to schools and the reopening of different things in our state than a premature congregation that then brings everyone back.
That's, you know, fair.
Believe me, I understand it. I want it. I wish we could do that. But what I wish and what's safe for the public are two different things, and I have to really defer to the health expert that can guide the governor's decisions also. So, you know, I think what I'm leaning toward and what I'm asking superintendents to continue to do, and they've been doing it, is engage your seniors to say, given the current reality with our health risk, what could we do? And, you know, what are some options that we have? And some are choosing to do something online, which is not the same. I understand that. Mm-hmm. Some are, you know, coming up with creative ways to honor the students and saying that if things get better later in the summer or early in the fall, we can come together in a more traditional way to honor the seniors.
Well, then let me just allow me one follow-up question to that, because as we all know, geographically speaking, depending on where you are in the state, there are areas of the state that have been less affected, and there are areas of the state that have been more affected. If you want to, it's hard to compare Windham County to Fairfield County, you know, when it comes to how many people have contracted the coronavirus. Would you, or would the state ever consider leaving it up to each individual municipality to make that decision?
I think part of the and you're absolutely right, Windham County, New London County, there's less prevalence of COVID-19 than Fairfield County. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the risk might be different. We do have regional teams giving us input on from the education perspective, and we'll continue to examine where it's possible to differentiate strategies. With regard to something like that, I know the executive orders are intended to cover all of Connecticut, that would have to be a decision that the reopening team would have to look at to say, are we going to allow for certain things to happen in certain parts of the state that cannot happen in other parts, keeping in mind that people travel, right? So if a graduate from one part of the state is celebrating and there's a family member that lives in another part of the state, are we going to then monitor or prevent that person from having that family member come? So those are some things that the team would have to consider if we start to regionalize some of the executive orders.
Yeah, we're talking, by the way, with the commissioner of the State Department of Education, Dr. Miguel Cardona. How often are you meeting with the governor and public health officials here in the state?
At least 5-6 times a week.
Wow.
You know, the governor holds daily briefing calls. I participate in municipal calls with all municipal leaders once a week where there's question and answer. And at least 3 to 4 either reopening committee meetings or chair meetings of the reopening committee. There's a lot of meetings to update so that I get updates on the health updates. I get updates on the economic piece, and I provide updates on education. So very regularly we're in communication.
Okay. And just to reiterate before we wrap things up here, so the rest of the school year obviously is going to be taught online, maybe some summer classes as well. By the way, online teaching, it's not a full 8-day, right? 8-hour school day, right? It's much more like it's about four or five hours or...
Right. We're not trying to have distance learning or remote learning replace the classroom experience. You know, quite frankly, there are times where my own kids, it seems like they're doing more work and putting in more time during a distance learning day than what they would have if they were in a schoolhouse. But I think that balanced out. I think everybody was trying to figure out how to best do this. It's settled a little bit now where students shouldn't be stressed out or overwhelmed too much to handle that. I know that's easy to say, but it is stressful. It is challenging at times. But you're right. It shouldn't be an 8-hour-a-day experience for these students.
Yeah, and for the parents as well, because if you've got a youngster, if you've got a child in elementary school and they're not familiar with passwords and portals and accessing the Internet at home, and they depend on mom or dad, but mom or dad also maybe have to be working remotely. It's very difficult sometimes where if mom or dad has a business meeting on Zoom, but their youngster has something that they have to do online and maybe check in with a teacher as well. It's hard to be, that ubiquitous online between two. And that poses time problems with time, you know, and
families don't need that extra stress. Not to mention that family whose mother or father are grocers, or they work where they have to be there.
Good point.
And there's one computer at the house, there's 3 siblings, and they all have to meet up with their teacher at 9:00.
Oh.
So there are some realities out there that we have to be patient with our students, with our families. And families, take a deep breath. Know that we're not expecting you to replicate the experience. We actually are working on a workshop for families that you'll find on our website, you know, how to just, you know, put in perspective, you know, relax, don't put too much expectations on yourselves. And, you know, I think a lot of people are getting fatigued with this distance learning. So we want to just make sure we kind of reset and just give clear expectations as to how you can help and what not to worry about with this distance learning, because parents are working really hard.
Yeah, great. And so there's a possibility that in the fall for the next school year, there's a possibility that it could start on time in brick and mortar schools, right? There's a possibility that we can hold on to that, right?
That's what I'm shooting for.
Okay, good. We love it.
And it might be that we have to do it in a different way, okay? I doubt it's ever going to be, you know, on September 1st, it's going to be like it was on March 12th,
sure,
right? Or March 11th. But it could be that we start phasing students in or having adjusted schedules. But we want to communicate that to parents as soon as possible. We're looking at the best way to do it to bring students back. We need to get back into our schools, and we need the schools to continue to be those communities of growth for our kids and for our families.
Yeah, and you're right. There's nothing like the visuals and the social interactions. And finally, just to reiterate, a little bit of hope that our seniors would have a day or two for not only graduation, but, you know, to have some closure or say their goodbyes. We can still hold out a little hope for like a day or two for just our seniors.
Oh, man, I wish I could tell you what you want to hear. What I will say is that in June, it's highly unlikely.
Oh.
We're going to keep in mind, though, that the opening of our communities and the numbers of people that can congregate together may increase as the summer goes on. And it could be that that would allow for small ceremonies or small opportunities for students to reengage together in a way to celebrate them. But again, I defer to the health folks that
sure.
are going to make sure they keep us safe so that we can continue moving forward and not risk anyone's health or life.
Yeah, maybe they can have something outdoors. I got about a minute left, and I'm going to give it to you. You got all of Central Connecticut here that is listening, and we've been promoting this. So I got a minute left, and I'm going to give those airwaves to you if there's anything that you'd like to communicate to them.
I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the time on the airwaves. And to the listeners out there, I know how challenging this is. Believe me, I'm experiencing it myself. I know our teachers want to get back with their students, but they're also dealing with their own children. It's very challenging, but one thing about our educational community is we're resilient. We're going to do what's best for kids and families, and we're all eager to continue to work together to make sure that we can provide opportunities for your kids, not only academically, but when they come back, socially and emotionally, to engage with our schools. And we want to be there to support them because they've experienced a lot of trauma. So we're prepared to support you and your children, and just work with us. Continue to have patience. We know you're doing your very best, and together we're going to get through this.
Well stated. Well stated. And this is why our listeners, this is why people really, really enjoy you and enjoy our time and love the work that you're doing. I appreciate your time so much. You've now been with me twice. Maybe we can check in sometime down the road. And you've always been engaging and honest. And that's all I can ever ask anybody to be. Thanks again.
Well, I appreciate it. Take care.